This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Yurko's moved on to Marco Van Basten highlights off of Johan Cruyff.
And then the Franz Beckenbauer is next.
Right around the corner. Roberto Baggio will follow.
No, one of yours, Giorgio Canalia.
Giorgio Canalia, who was a star with the New York team.
Cosmos.
The Cosmos in the 70s and late 70s.
Oh, you bet he did, Carm.
Oh, my God, Yurko.
All the greats, Carm.
Yours. Now Yurko has turned his laptop so I can't see.
Carmen's distracted.
What he's watching.
I looked at Carmen's computer. I go, Carmen, what's with all that stuff you've got on there?
I've got on Twitter.
That's my point.
Baseball Reference.
Again.
Coach Fitz.
Distractions.
You know, off of the practice field. Stuff that we're talking about. Nobody's talking about Johan Cruyff.
What a shame.
It's Carmen and Yurko, and you're watching us on Twitch, hopefully. You can see all the fun we're having in our first Midwest Bank State Street Studios. Twitch.tv. Download the Twitch app. Search ESPN 1000 Chicago. Jesse Rogers in 30, but right now on the Corona Hotline, we are pleased to say hello to one of our faves. He's always energetic, and he's getting ready for a season a month from today, believe it or not. They are going to start playing in the Big Ten, hopefully. Looks good. Coach Fitz joins us now on ESPN 1000. Coach, how are you?
Carmen Yurko, it's an honor to be with you guys, and I'm fired up to be 30 days out from the opener. Let's go.
30 days out. I mean, take us back to about a month ago, or, you know, mid-August, when you had heard what the vote was and that you guys weren't going to play. I mean, did you think that that was it? It was locked in, or what were you thinking on that day, Fitz?
Well, when we heard it was postponed, I thought there was a glimmer of hope. And then, you know, obviously being engaged with the conference and our ADs in discussions about how we were going to be able to get things up and operational from a health and safety standpoint. You know, we had kept open hope, but it was devastating for our seniors, especially in their families. So you really try to help those guys through it. And, you know, now we're at today, just walked off the field, and the guys are fired up to have the opportunity to play. And sounds like we're going to start our daily testing starting a week from 6 days from now. So we'll get actually be able to put some pads on and play some real football.
Are you happy with the protocols in place? Do you think this is safe?
If we can execute on all of them, yes, absolutely. You know, we're going to be daily testing our student athletes and our staff. We'll have a pseudo bubble of about 170 people around the program that will be tested daily. And then obviously the choices that we make, just like the Bears, you know, once they leave Hallis Hall, once we leave the Walter Athletic Center. But our guys, you know, we've talked a lot about the discipline and the sacrifice it's going to take to be successful this year, and our guys are committed to doing it. But yes, I do believe that we'll be able to execute this in a healthy and safe manner, and look forward to getting our guys back out there.
Once it's a go, though, are we going to make it all the way through no matter what?
Well, I think as we see right now that's happening throughout college football, it really has to do with the social choices that happen, you know, outside of the buildings and outside of the normal football operations in our world. So I hope our parents are making great choices. It really comes down to that. Talking to some of my colleagues in college football, the issues have been post-game when people from out of town have come in town, and now there's interactions that have, you know, happened. So, listen, this is real. We need to operate and make sure that we're doing everything that we can from a social distancing, a masking, and a sanitizing standpoint. And now when we get to this testing, it's going to really come down to the social decisions.
Northwestern head coach Pat Fitzgerald joining us. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. How is it different coaching in this environment, on the field, the weight room? Are things different because of all the precautions that are being taken?
Yeah, everything's different. Yeah, I mean, if you were to walk in, you'll see, you know, social distancing. Right now, we can only strike a bag in sleds, so it's really not a typical football practice. But, yeah, you know, we can do this. We can do this, and we're going to get it done. You know, my other hope, too, is for the state of Illinois, for our student-athletes to get an opportunity to play. You know, the young men and young women that, you know, have had their fall sports taken from them. You know, I really hope that we can show, you know, the state that, hey, if we can do it, the Bears can do it, the Cubs and Sox can do it. You know, let's let our high school student-athletes have the opportunity to do it, too, and give that choice up to the schools and give it up to the parents. I've got a sophomore son at Loyola Academy, and I'd really love to have him have the opportunity to play football, the game that he loves, if they can execute it in a health and safe manner, too. So, you know, hopefully this will get some change going for our high school student-athletes, too.
With no fans at the games and the Breaks start beating the boys, how is it that one changes the momentum of the current game without anybody supporting anybody?
Yeah, we were thinking about getting some songs going on the boundary, brother. You know what I mean? You know, go back to the mid-90s, get a little Frank Sinatra, a little High Hopes going. Maybe I'll dust that off.
Anything that'll help.
25th reunion. Yeah.
Seven Nation Army.
Hey, whatever, gets it going. But, you know, I think when you watch the current games, and it'll be a little different in Big Ten play than maybe seeing some of the other leagues, because we are not going to be selling tickets to fans, which stinks for our fans, but hopefully we'll put a great product on TV for them and they'll enjoy it. And we'll be back to a quote-unquote normal 21 season next year. But, you know, just really excited for our guys that feel, you know, that they get the opportunity to play the game that they love, and they feel like we're doing it in a health and safe manner. And I feel like we are, and we're exhausting everything that our doctors are giving us from a standpoint of making sure we're keeping the environment that way, but it's on all of us to do it. And like I said, the challenge is going to be socially, more so than football, once we really get going.
What's it like on campus, and what has the reaction been like, Coach, you know, with the announcement of the return to play? I mean, not everybody's always going to be happy with everything, especially in this environment that we live in now. But, like, what has the reaction been like from the student body as far as you can tell?
Well, we have two classes not here. The group I'm around the most are our student athletes, you know, our football players, and I can just tell you that they're fired up. They're excited for the opportunity to play the game they love. And, you know, as I drive around or I'm going home, I got people honking the horn or, you know, on their scooters on campus, go Cats, let's go. You know, they're all fired up. So, you know, listen, control what you can control, and that's the choices that we make and the way we execute the plan, and I have full confidence that we'll be able to do it.
What kind of communication did you guys have with your guys, like, in the height of all this, too, maybe when everybody was away spring or summer? I mean, how did you try to keep everybody on the roster engaged sort of with the program?
Well, initially, you know, we were right in the middle of spring ball, and then we were going on spring break when things got shut down, so we gave our guys a little bit of time, and then we came back to Zoom and went through, you know, offense, defense, special teams, Zooms, and we just really wanted to stay connected and communicate. We did, and brought in some guest speakers, some entertaining, some very serious, and others just, you know, more educational. So we try to break it up and not grind the guys up too much mentally. And I'm in the same phase right now physically. You know, we're 30 days out from the opener. We're using our sports scientists to really guide us on how long we're on the field, what we're doing, and more of a buildup to the opener to make sure that we try to do a great job, obviously from the COVID standpoint, but also from the soft tissue issues. You guys saw it on the NFL games over the weekend. I mean, it was just it was really sad to see. And the last time you saw this happen was a lockout year. So I think our guys have been training. They came back in really good shape. 30 days from now, I need to make sure they're mentally fresh, physically fresh, and emotionally fresh. But at the same time, over the next 30 days, make sure, you know, we callus ourselves the right way to get ready to play a physical game and make sure we're in great cardiovascular shape.
That's a great point about trying the best you can to avoid all the soft tissue stuff. And like you said, Coach, you know, just look at the NFL. I mean, it sounds great. Is it really possible, though? Like, can you... It just seems like it's really hard to prevent some of that when you can't get in the rhythm that you're sort of accustomed to getting into as you prepare for such a physical game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you just got to, you know, adapt, improvise, and overcome, right? I mean, you've got to adapt your practices. You've got to work hard with your athletic training staff and strength staff. We've got all these GPS monitors now to see the workload and, you know, are we building guys up properly? We also do a self-assessment post-practice, and then, you know, when guys get up in the morning to talk to us about how they're feeling. And then if we've got to tweak, you know, the practice plan individually for a guy or for a position group, let's say we're throwing one-on-one routes and our receivers, and they all are like, their legs are, you know, their hamstrings are tight, and, you know, instead of throwing one-on-ones, we might just work the top of the route timing. So, you know, you just got to be adaptive, and you got to be able to improvise on the fly, and then, you know, you just got to have a great attitude when you got to really adjust. And that's stuff that, you know, that's life, that's football, and that's why it's such a great microcosm of life, is things happen. Hey, we're sitting there and two guys all of a sudden are like, you know, whatever, I got the sniffles. I mean, right now we're shutting guys down out of an abundance of caution and testing them. So that happens. All of a sudden, hey, the starting center's out, move the right guard in, left guard in over here, and and let's go. So everybody's got to be ready to play. It's going to be fun, and I'm just ecstatic that our guys get to play the game they love to play.
Got
to
be fluid. A couple more minutes with Coach Fitz, with Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Which speaker, by the way, did the guys like the most? Do you remember?
I don't want to speak for them. I like Caliendo. I mean, he was
Sweet Frankie.
He was great. Him or Peyton Manning. I mean, those guys were outstanding. Yeah, Peyton came in his alter ego and made sure he had the Tennessee background and reminded all the guys. He had video about how he picked us apart in 96.
That's awesome.
you know, we've known each other for a long time. So he was excellent. Yeah, everybody was great. Everybody that we had, you know, Lewis Riddick, I mean, we had a lot of guys come in. And, you know, now especially, too, as we look to the future, you know, this is going to be a sprint once we get to the season. So, you know, just trying to make sure the guys are continuing as we do go through a quote-unquote camp, preseason camp, that they're still having fun and enjoying each other's time, camaraderie and building the chemistry of the team.
Have you watched ACC, maybe Notre Dame in the first couple of weeks? Like, have you watched some other college football in the first couple of weeks here?
Yeah, I have, and I'm fired up for tonight's game. I've been going through a football withdrawal the last 2 days after the Monday night game. Yeah, I mean, without any Maction, it kind of stinks. You know, we'd be getting ready for Maction here coming up.
That's right. I know, midweek Maction, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a believer of football every day. So it's been great. I've watched more of the Bears to see them 2-0. Just really excited about that. And, you know, I don't get a chance typically to watch a lot of NFL football during the season. But, man, they got to create a college football red zone. That NFL red zone is absolutely phenomenal.
It sure is.
That is some good TV right there. So it's been fun to watch, and it's been great getting out to watch my boys play some flag football. You know, it's disappointing they're not playing grade school tackle football, but I've been able to watch them play some flag football, which has been awesome.
Coach, thanks as always. Good luck. Keep everybody healthy, and we'll be watching, all right? Thank you.
But, hey, appreciate you guys, all of our great Cat fans. Look forward to making you proud in a month, and everybody, let's stay safe and love on each other. Go Cats. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good, Coach. We'll see you. There he is, Coach Fitz, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern.
He quoted Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Highway there. Did you get that? No. From Heartbreak Ridge?
Which line?
Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Nicely done.
That's Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Highway.
Good job.
A nice little rejoin tomorrow, you know?
JR, you're going to have to put that together.
A little rejoin tomorrow. You'll be able to find that easy when he addresses his troops.
Yurko's happy about that.
Oh, yeah. I started laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because let's face it, he's from that time. I'm sure he's a Clint Eastwood fan.
Well, who isn't?
Yeah. Well,
makes
really?
Good movies.
Really? We didn't have He Makes the Same Movies, the critiques Ooh. Coming oh. from others?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, not everybody necessarily loves Clint Eastwood.
I love Clint
I am
Eastwood
sure
movies.
Fitz loves Clint Eastwood.
I love his movies.
What a great movie. If you haven't seen that in a while, give that one another spin. And the Clint's in love, and, you know, he left a girl, and she's seeing another guy, and he's trying to woo her, reading these female books, trying to figure out how to get to her softer, sensitive side.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. You got to watch
it. You ever see, you want to know a real sleeper Clint Eastwood movie that he, and most of his movies he starred in and directed?
Sleeper.
Total sleeper, if you ask me. A Perfect World. You ever see that?
Yes.
With Kevin Costner?
Yes.
That movie is fantastic.
And a little kid. Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and I'm not a big Kevin Costner fan, really.
Like, no, you're not.
I love Bull Durham and some of, you know, some
Open
of the early...
Range with him and Bobby the Ball.
I liked Open Range. I didn't Lester. Like the ending. I thought the ending was kind of...
Sappy?
Yeah.
You ended up with the girl?
Yeah, too much. Yeah, yeah.
Sappy? We didn't like ruin it. Nothing. If you haven't seen it, you can rot, all right, people?
But...
No Way Out?
I like No Way Out.
That's
See,
a good
like
movie.
Old school Kevin Costner stuff is good. Bull Durham, I obviously love. Yeah, No Way Out's a good movie, but A
what
Perfect
about
World...
Revenge?
I don't think I've seen Revenge.
Revenge is the one where he's with the Mexican mobster down in Mexico,
that.
Sleeps with his wife,
no.
and then they beat the living hell out of him. They cut her up, and she's in Tijuana in some, you know, blank house.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, Bordello. Ends up in a Bordello.
Old school? Like
yeah,
80s Costner?
Revenge. And yeah. Anthony Quinn is the...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Good old Anthony Quinn, baby.
Anthony Quinn.
Nothing
still
wrong with that cast.
Done at 80,
yeah.
you know?
He's still getting it done. He was still fathering children.
He didn't need Blue Chew at 80. He was making
yeah.
it happen.
Right. Anthony Quinn, right.
Yeah.
The mighty Quinn.
Zorba. And, he doesn't need any Blue Chew back. He just go and...
Who's
hey,
mightier?
I'm Anthony Quinn.
Anthony Quinn or Robert Quinn? Which one's mightier?
It's Anthony Quinn.
Yeah. You know, Carm, I've got his t-shirt if you want to make a trade.
Yeah, sounds good, Kramer. I like it. Yeah, A Perfect World. Watch it. You won't think.
Perfect World.
Yeah, you people won't think that Clint Eastwood just does the same thing every time. It's fantastic. 312-332-3776. That is the phone number. Jesse Rogers joins us in about 15 minutes. We'll talk a little Bears coming up next as they prepare for this weekend's trip down to Atlanta and another injury on the D-line. That's coming up next.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Yeah, the Bears have been one of the best running teams, one of the most efficient running teams anyway in the NFL through the first couple of weeks, despite the fact that they don't have a rushing touchdown. I told you earlier in the week, only two teams don't have a rushing touchdown in the first two games. It's Titans, which I think is more surprising maybe.
Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry.
Yeah, with Derrick Henry. But they're 2-0. And the Bears don't have one, and they're 2-0. But the Bears are top 11 in the NFL in yards per attempt. David Montgomery's averaging 5 yards per attempt so far to start the season. I'd like to keep that going this weekend in Atlanta. Here was Matt Nagy yesterday on the Zoom call, as it was a back-to-work Wednesday, talking about David Montgomery and how he's pretty to watch on tape right now.
The instincts. I think you see just pure instincts. It was just fluid the way that he ran the football. You know, you could just see that. He could tell what he was going to do before the defender knew what he was going to do, and just had a lot of nice long runs, and it's just pretty to watch.
And here's Matt Nagy talking about running the ball early. Are they changing their identity to a run committed offense or a more run committed offense?
We've come to kind of realize that in 2 years now, and now heading into our third year, that schematically this is something, the direction that we wanted to go to. I don't know if we'll always live in this world. I have no idea, but it's something that we felt like, okay, let's work to our players' strengths and let's go ahead and adjust what we need to do schematically and see if it works. So far it's been pretty good. We have other things that we can do. We have alternative ideas and thoughts, but you know, I give credit to the coaching staff and then to the players accepting it and now putting it into motion. So we're still growing. We're not close to where we need to be, but we're figuring it out right now, and it's nice to be 2-0 while you do it.
If you trusted the quarterback more, would they be running the ball as much?
Well, maybe not. Maybe they'd have a little more faith in making it a more dynamic offense. But you know what's sexy?
What's sexy?
Winning football.
Yeah, that's true.
Running football is not sexy. It's not. I wish it was. It's not.
Unless it's Barry Sanders.
You know, and that's Barry Sanders usually breaking tackles and breaking ankles.
Right.
You know, and he did a lot of that. He did both of those. I mean, and that's fun. Watch him catch that little screen pass the way he used to just toss it. You know, he'd go and look like he was going to block. He'd turn around, get the ball. And the next thing you know, there they go, four wides on the field, a lot of defensive backs, and him just darting in and out. The Oakland game's the best one I ever saw him play, or the L.A. Raiders at the time, where he was just twisting guys. And Torian, I think Stacy Torian was a defensive back at the time. And I remember him not knowing which direction to go. But I think the point is, winning football sexy, running football not sexy, but if you got to run to win, then guess what? It's as sexy as it's going to be, period. And as long as you don't have to rely too much on number 10, you're going to be okay. Defense, run the ball, every once in a while pass the ball and get it to where it needs to be.
I love it when a team can run the ball when you're up 7, 10, 14, and there's 5 minutes left. That's what I love.
When you can ram it down their throat, that's what I love. When they put an eighth guy in the box and you can still run, that's some skill.
Now that I could watch and say, yes, boys, that's how you do
it. That's
how you win games in the NFL.
The way to keep a team like that honest in a four-minute drill is if you do have a running quarterback, bootlegging that guy out or making him the option that keeps the ball to gain positive yardage and stay in bounds, because then the guy crashing off the end can't crash off the end, which will allow you to run maybe in the middle. Hmm. So that's another one of those things that you've got to be willing to do. You've got to be willing to let your quarterback hand it off, and then tuck it back inside and run around the corner. That way, if those guys are crashing, and you know, the quarterback, after he hands off, looks to see what the defense is doing. And if he sees somebody, you know, forgetting the fact that he's got to have contained, then you make the call. As a quarterback, don't tell anybody. Just run the same play and pull the ball afterwards. You know, maybe tell the running back, hey, I'm going to pull it out of here. I'm going to bootleg this one. smart play as a quarterback. You got to be seasoned a little bit to be able to do that, have the confidence to do it.
The NFL through the first 2 weeks been a lot about offense, obviously. I gave you the stat about an hour ago during crosstalk that this is the most points and the most yards that we've ever seen through the first couple of weeks, through the first 2 weeks of the season post-merger. So that goes back 50 years. It's a lot of seasons, a lot of data, and offense is kind of dominating here early. Maybe that's to be expected considering the crazy year we're in. No fans in the stands, and Yurko has said a few times that that can affect the defense. Sometimes when you're at home and you're the defense, like
you expect them when you have the lead to go ahead and raise the noise a little bit to cause problems for the offense. That's not there this year.
Now they're pumping in that noise, but it's not nearly as loud.
That's why I think
as it normally would be.
It should be lower to either a 2 or 1.5 point home recognition. Like you're at home, but you're taking it down though.
Well, that's Furman tomorrow. Todd Furman's going to be our guest tomorrow live in Vegas and every Friday to talk gambling with us. Mike North and I will have odds couple tomorrow night to wrap the week 7 until 8. But, yeah, we're seeing a lot of points scored so far.
And I'm going to release my 13-pack again tomorrow.
Again? You're going to try again?
Oh, yeah, Carm. Oh. Every week I'm going to release the 13-pack. Last week's games were 10-3, not 13-0 the way I need it, the way I like it.
It's almost impossible.
My point to all the listeners is I'm going to give you my best feeling of what I see in a limited amount. I gave you 8 teams last week. I gave you 5 overs. 4 of those overs ended up coming in. Four of 5 overs came in, and I ended up giving you 6 out of 8 teams that came in. So I felt pretty good.
How much did you wager on that, Yurko?
$10.
$10?
Yeah, $10 to win $110,000. It didn't happen.
No, that wouldn't have been $110,000.
$175,000.
You're out of your stop it.
$2 million. Would have been great.
Do you know that, speaking of offense, that the Packers have become just the 4th team in NFL history to score more than 80 points and gain more than 1,000 yards in the first 2 weeks of a season?
I did not.
Only the 4th team. The other teams, Yurko,
New England.
Not New England. Believe it or not. I would have thought maybe that, like that 07 New England team.
How about the Rams? St. Louis Rams.
That's another excellent guess. Wrong answer.
How about San Diego Chargers?
Wrong answer.
Minnesota Vikings.
Wrong answer.
Okay.
You had a team do it last year. You had a team do it last year.
Came out of the gates fast. Dallas.
Nope.
Houston.
Nope.
Planet Houston.
Nope.
Chiefs. New Orleans.
Chiefs? Not the Chiefs. Not New Orleans. Not New Orleans.
Well, nobody else was scoring a lot of points.
Oh, somebody did. They had the MVP. The Ravens.
Baltimore.
The Ravens last year, 82 points, 1,083 yards. They lost their first playoff game. The 91 Bills. 87 points and almost 1,200 yards. They lost their second straight Super Bowl.
James Lofton.
And the other team, Mirko, the 1998 San Francisco 49ers. I think Mooch was the coach. 81 points, 1,061 yards. They lost in the division round of the Falcons. They won their wild card game against
the Packers.
Yep. And then they lost. And remember, that's when the Falcons used to be in the West.
Yep.
So even though they had a great season with an impressive offense, and I think they went 12-4, they were still the second team in the division that year because Atlanta went, I think, 14-2.
I think T.O. caught a touchdown pass. It was either T.O. or J.J. Stokes.
It was T.O. It was T.O.
It wasn't?
Yep.
And it was right in front of Leroy Butler.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right in front of Leroy Butler. I watched that. I could still see that play over and over and over and over again in my mind.
Why that one? Just because?
Because they had played well before out in Frisco. They had beaten Frisco a number of times out in San Francisco. They had the lead, and when your best defensive back, Hall of Famer, even though they haven't named him yet, even though his stats are better than the guys going into the Hall of Fame, you know, this year that were voted in, God forbid. Don't pay attention to any of those.
It's your guy.
Yeah, but because it was Leroy, and Leroy wasn't able to make the play, that's why I remember it like it was yesterday.
Will Chris Bryant return before the postseason, and will Chris Bryant start looking like the old Chris Bryant anytime soon? We're going to discuss that with Jesse Rogers when he joins us coming up next.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate? This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
While the White Sox are wrapping in Cleveland today, the Cubs will do the same against the Pirates in Pittsburgh, and then it's back to Chicago for 3 more between the Cubs and the Sox, and then the regular season is over, Yurko. And will Chris Bryant get a few hacks in there before the playoffs start? Our guest knows a thing or two about it. What's the plan? Let's talk to the man, Jesse Rogers. He joins us now on the Corona Hotline. He's with Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Jesse, what's up, buddy?
I'm doing well, fellas. Bryant out of the lineup again today. They have a day game in Pittsburgh. But The hope, I think, is Saturday and or Sunday against the White Sox to get him a couple at bats. If he doesn't play this weekend, I think next week could be in doubt as well. And you never know, if they get through the first round, maybe he's at 100% and that he plays after that. So it's up in the air. It's an oblique. These things are weird. At least it's not on the bad side where they're shutting him down right away. If even a light oblique injury is not good. And so we'll see. Maybe Saturday and Sunday. That's all I can tell you.
How are they setting up their pitching for the playoffs?
Well, it's going to be Darvish or Hendricks in game one and two. And I was actually thinking about this, Yurko. I mean, game three should be an all-hands-on-deck sort of situation. And if you want your game one starter to be available in game three, I think you need to take that in consideration. Hendricks doesn't throw as hard. He seems like the guy that'd be more likely to come back a day later, you know, and pitch in a game three if you need it. It's a bullpen day for guys. If you start game one, 2 days later, you'd be throwing a bullpen anyway, so you could get a couple innings. So I wonder if they're factoring that in at all. I mean, does it really matter, Darvish, Hendricks, Hendricks, Darvish at this point? I'm not sure if it does. And if you're taking into account all hands on deck in game three, I feel like Hendricks would probably be more ready for that situation than you, Darvish, out of the bullpen. So it's one of those two, Yurko. I don't know which two, but certainly John Lester would start a game three situation. There's no doubt about that in anyone's mind.
Does strategy change at all with no days off in the first two rounds, Jess?
Well, I think more in the division series, the next one, because five straight days. You have to make that decision if you end up playing a fifth game. Do you go with Alec Mills or whoever, or do you go to Yu Darvish on 3 days rest? It depends on how long the first series goes, of course, as well. But that's a huge decision. Where in the past, listen to this, in a five-game series, you'd be able to start your game two starter on full rest and your game one starter on extra rest.
How about that?
Now in a five-game situation, your game one starter is starting on short rest.
Yep.
So it really changes things. And, Trevor Bauer would love that situation because he did it last night, pitched great. He likes short rest. I don't know if Yu Darvish or Kyle Hendricks would be great on short rest. It just hasn't happened often.
Back to Brian a little bit. How do we explain this season? COVID, injury, I never would expect Chris Bryant to have this type of year, I guess, Jess. And I don't think Chris Bryant's a bad baseball player at all. I think he's terrific. But it is a little stunning to see five RBIs. How do we explain it? Is it all just the injuries this year?
Well, a lot of it is the injuries for sure. And he's had four different things that have kept him out of the lineup. Wrist/finger, elbow. He had a stomach thing, which was a couple days. They had to make sure it wasn't COVID. And now this situation with the oblique. That's a lot in a 60-game season. So we have to give him a little bit of a pass, but it still also says that he's not able to produce through those nagging injuries. I don't know. We can't compare him to someone with the same injuries. Right? Could Rizzo play through all four of those injuries and produce? I don't know. That's impossible to say. But when you have four injuries in the span of 60 games or four things that have kept you out of the lineup, yes, you have to take that into consideration. Look, Baez hasn't been injured. He's having an awful
year.
Yeah. So I don't know why we can only pick on Chris Bryant, but he has sort of become injury prone in a sense, and they're nagging injuries. They're not major ones that have kept him out of the lineup. I don't know how to describe it. And this has been a big topic, I know, for people, Chris Bryant. It's about perception. It's about perspective. He's a good player, but because of all these things that have gone on, he's no longer that $300 million Mookie Betts type, Mike Trout type. He's one level below that.
The Cubs seem
to have a lot of guys one level below superstar status these days, and maybe that's being kind based on this 60-game season.
I think that's why he's so polarizing, because of that contract that's sort of looming, and you say, well, he's not going to get that deal anymore, and I mean, are we sure that some team might not offer it to him? I don't know. I mean, but that is why, he set the bar pretty high, and players like that tend to be very polarizing if they slump a little bit.
Yeah, it rarely, look, no one ever did in the history of the game what he did in a four-year span. Remember, collegiate player of the year, minor league player of the year, rookie of the year, MVP. You can't set a higher bar than that.
Right.
You simply can't. And he's come off of that a little bit and more than a little bit, certainly this year. Look, you ask if someone's going to offer him it, all it takes is the year before free agency. Mm-hmm. If he goes off next year, he'll get a big contract. Nobody cares about 2018 when you produce right before your free agent year. So it's all about that season coming up. He's got to stay healthy. Otherwise, he's going to get that label, and he's got to produce. So it really is about next year.
You think he finishes out next year with the Cubs, Jess?
I mean, if you asked me a year ago, I would have said no. There's certainly a much better chance now. I think he starts next year with the Cubs because the trade value can't be great, and he's going to cost you $20 million in arbitration. But by July, he could be gone. I mean, it depends. If they're in it and he's playing well, they'll keep him. You can't trade a huge asset when you're in it. So I can't predict the future. But he certainly is on the block, let's put it that way, because they certainly don't want to let him walk and not get anything for him. But the deal has to be right. The timing has to be right.
And so the social media age, like, managers are damned if they do, damned if they don't. You know, Ross takes heat when he doesn't bench Baez. Then he takes heat when he does bench a player for not hustling. What was behind the Schwarber thing? Does he just know his players well and he knew Schwarber could handle it? I mean, like, you know, was it surprising to see Ross pull that move Sunday night?
I mean, sure, it was surprising because it's the first time he's done it. You don't see too many managers do it in the middle of the game. What I liked about it, where I do think it's a little different than Baez, and I used to coach Little League, and I hated this when my pitcher was laboring out there, and, you know, the center fielder has to make one play, and he's asleep, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the key here. It's about being a bad teammate in that moment. If Baez stares at a ball off the wall, yes, it hurts the team, but it's really, you know, about him. When Schwarber dogs a ball, well, that puts a runner on third for Darvish, who's trying to win a Cy Young, trying to, you know, he's having an incredible year. That run scored on a ground ball. That would not have scored if that was a double, right? To me, that's the time to pull a guy because you're being a really bad teammate to a guy that is pitching his butt off that day and every day that he's been on the mound this season. So I like that more than a guy staring at a ball, especially if you're a star player that plays every day. Once in a while, you're going to screw up, think it's going foul and it's fair, think it's going out and it's off the wall. So to me, that was the right timing of it. I think, and I'm writing about this tomorrow, I think David Ross has, without stating it, turned into playoff mode, David Ross.
Yeah.
He moved Baez down, pulled Lester early, and pulled Schwarber in mid-game all in the span of 1 week here. I think he's in playoff mode, and he's trying to tell his team that. Remember, David Ross is all edgy and intensity when it comes to the competition of it all. He's not dancing with the stars, Grandpa Rossi. He's, I want to win, and I'm not going to blow this chance. You guys better follow along. Three different things he's done that I think tell us the kind of mode and thinking he's in.
Jess, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
All right, guys.
See you, pal.
See you, York.
There is Jesse Rogers at Jesse Rogers. What is Jesse's new handle? At Jesse Rogers ESPN?
New handle?
Yeah. Well, he's got a new handle. It's not ESPN Shy Cubs anymore. At Jesse Rogers ESPN on Twitter. Do you ever think you'd see a day where Jason Hayward had the best OPS plus on your team?
I would not think that to be true.
144, Yurko. That's the best.
That goes to show you how horrific everybody else has been.
I mean, Hap's been good. He's 133. Kipnis in a much more limited role, only 122 plate appearances, 110. So Kipnis has been 10% above average. Anthony Rizzo, about average, 102. Everybody else, all your other regulars, including Bryant, the rookie Nico Horner, everybody else, below 100. Victor Caratini, Baez, 54, Yurk. 54.
He's been bad.
Bodie, 92. Schwarber, 88.
He doesn't have his.
Contreras, 97.
Does he have his contract extension yet?
Not yet.
Baez?
Wow. Guess who's going to join us next? Sylvie. We'll have some fun with Sylvie.
Wait.
And we're going to tell him to stop talking about Luis Robert. That's
right.
Coming up next.
Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
Listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
The ugly numbers again for Luis Robert since his last hit on September 15th. 0 for 26 with 14 strikeouts. And there's really only one person to blame. It's not Rick Renteria. It's not Luis Robert. It's Mark Silverman. He is
He's the guy to blame.
He's the one guy to blame. And he joins us now with Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. keep his name out your mouth. You understand
me? I'm the freezer now all of a sudden.
You're the cooler. You're William H. Macy.
You know what? It's like, hey, Sylvie, you don't talk enough socks. Sylvie, talk socks. Now it's like, we talk socks, and now it's like, hey, shut up, stay out of White Sox business, your mouth.
You better stay out of White Sox businesses, right, mister? I'm going to send Kenny to your house. I loved the rant yesterday, and you and Gordo are kind of having fun. Now, when he did he like indirectly reference something you were saying recently? Were you the local broadcaster that was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so you missed it. So I wake up yesterday, and by the way, this is great to do this crosstalk thing again.
Yeah, no kidding, isn't
it? I've missed you guys so much.
We miss you, too.
Your scent.
I miss your musk. I want to get an apartment together.
Especially Yurko. Yurko always smells pretty good.
Always. He does.
Yeah. So Waddle sends me this article yesterday morning at like 7:30. I had the worst sleep ever. And then, like, I'm groggy, I'm opening this thing up, and it's, like, to all the Chris Bryant, quote, haters and everything. And then I see it, in the middle of the article that he copied and pasted my tweet without giving any credit to it. He used my quotes. Like, it's just like if we use his article, we say NBC Sports Chicago. We say Gordon Whitmire. So not only did I think his take was horrible, which it is, and like all of a sudden now we can't expect excellence from players who are supposed to be awesome. But then he didn't give me proper attribution. So a guy who I've never had issues with, I was a little hot at yesterday.
You were pretty fired up, man. But it was a good, passionate defense of all of those who are questioning what's happening with Chris Bryant. I think Gordon's right that it'd be very meathead to say Chris Bryant stinks and that you want nothing to do with him. And you see an aspect of that, I guess, out there. And that's kind of silly. But it is very fair to question the players that are supposed to be great, that have set the bar very high. Chris Bryant did that. Nobody else did it. Chris Bryant did. And, you know, like you guys were saying yesterday, all the cliches, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And much of it's with great responsibility comes
great
expectation, you know, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know.
Great expectations but, create great responsibility.
Yeah, I don't think it's unfair to wonder, you know, like, how do you proceed with Chris Bryant? Do you really want to offer him $300 million a year from now? It's a good debate.
It's an interesting one because here's the way I play this out. So at the end of the year, you have 1 year left on his deal, and you know that he wants big money when he reaches free agency. He's coming off his worst season ever, albeit in a COVID time, but he's coming off his worst season ever. Is a team going to be willing to give you up a top prospect or two, what you would expect? Let me get inside here. Someone's cutting their grass.
Careful.
Would you be willing to give up a top prospect or two for Chris Bryant? And my answer probably is no. If Gordon Whitmire really wanted to do work instead of just scroll his Twitter mentions and write a whole article about what Twitter is saying, he would talk to baseball executives and he would figure out, what is Chris Bryant's worth on the market? What are baseball executives saying about him?
Yeah.
And but what I hear is baseball, I know what Theo thinks of him right now, that baseball executives right now probably like him, but do they love him? Do they want to pay him? Do they want to part with great prospects for 1 year of Chris Bryant? So if you're not getting any top prospects for Chris Bryant, why even trade him? So then you proceed forward with 1 year of Chris Bryant. You hope that he turns it around, and then he reaches free agency and he probably leaves you. So I feel like the Cubs are in a trick box right now, and I don't hate Chris Bryant. I like Chris Bryant. I want Chris Bryant on my team. If he would get Scott Boras out of his corner and take a realistic number, I would want to sign Chris Bryant and get him right. But look, if you're going to go, hey, bro, this is business, and Scott Boras is on my team, and I'm looking for every possible cent, then I'm going to expect big numbers from you. And I don't think any fan who does is out of their mind. I think they're just critically thinking.
I think the Cubs should do what the Nationals did with Rendon last year. You know, they knew what was coming. They also knew he was one of their best players. And they, you know, he stayed with them. He had a great year. He had a great October. They win a World Series, and he goes to Anaheim, you know.
Yeah, ride him. Ride him.
I don't disagree.
And by the way, going back to
Lou Bob?
I'm calling him Kosuke Fukudome right now.
You better watch because it, mister.
He started the year so well, and now at the end of the
Kosuke
year during playoff time.
Kosuke Fukudome.
The great Kosuke. Hisop. Troy, my other favorite.
Yeah, but Hisop never got off to a good start. Kosuke did.
You remember that? Yeah. So how do you like Kosuke out there?
You better watch. I'm telling you, don't mention him anymore. Don't talk about him. I do like the nickname for Crochet. That's very funny. Good work by you guys. The Crotchet Rocket.
The Crotchet Rocket,
that's very good. Yeah. He's throwing 101 every time he goes to the mound. He's got that big leg kick from the windup. I love it. So that's all good.
What a weapon that is.
Yes.
Oh, it's amazing.
It could be very valuable. Don't talk about Robert. Stay out of White Sox business. Don't even watch him, okay?
Yeah, I'm out of White Sox business.
It was good to talk to you, Sylvie.
Yeah, I've missed you guys so much. Yeah, Yurko, everything good with you? You picking the Bears this week or no?
I don't know yet. I haven't analyzed that game. Atlanta's got a lot of injuries.
You got to wait for the keys tomorrow.
Yeah, the keys to the game will come out, and then I'll get a feeling. But I'll give you a 13-pack, 10-3 last week. I lost my 13-team parlay. But we got a fresh 13 coming at you tomorrow.
Good luck to you. All right.
10-3 is good, though.
It is good. It's very good.
Yeah.
I call it Yurko's Baker's Dozen.
All right. See you later. Have a good show later.
See you, boys.
Hey, bye-bye. There's Sylvie.
Enjoy the maple donuts, kid.
That was good stuff. He and Waddle going after Gordon. I love it. Dave's in Bolingbrook on ESPN 1000. Hey, Dave.
What's up, Carm Yurk?
What's up, man?
I was just going to say, I think this Cubs team, they're one of the most head-scratching, baffling teams I think I've ever been involved with. Not one of them players has progressed and become what we thought they would after the World Championship. I don't know. It's just strange.
It is. I don't know how to explain it, Dave. They've tried coaching changes. They tried a managerial change. Maybe you got to throw everything out this year. I don't really know. It's a goofy year.
We got Grandpa Rossi. Isn't everything supposed to be okay again?
And they're like, they're good enough to win their division again. Right, they're going to win their division again. Right?
Kings of a crappy division.
But I don't think it's what Cub fans thought, certainly coming out of 16, right? Even maybe after 17. I don't know how to explain the offense. I really don't. Cub fans tell me to stop trying. There is no explaining it. It's been coaching. Again, you've had coaching changes. You've had a managerial change. What else are you supposed to do? You sent Hap down, and Hap, to his credit, has been better. I mean, this is more the player they thought they were getting. But I don't know how you explain it. They've scored like 5 runs in the last 5 games or something, haven't they? I mean, it's crazy. They still have a 3.5 game lead over the Cardinals, though. Yurk, you're right. They're going to win a bad division. All right, good kid. Football Friday tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Thank you to Coach Pat Fitzgerald for joining us today. Thank you to Jesse Rogers. Thanks to Sylvie. Great job by our producers, J.R. Strauss, Jeff Meller, and Randy Merkin. We will see everybody tomorrow for a Football Friday. Get you ready for Bears and Falcons and the rest of the week. Plus, Todd Furman will be our guest from Vegas. It's going to be great to have Todd Furman back on Fridays. Greeny's next. Then it's Waddle and Sylvie. Then the baseball show with Black and Abdallah. Everybody have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
Well, I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia!